Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people. I have a weird thing that I want to share, like a personal experience coming up.
That's great. And Justin Robert Young.
Hey, everybody. It's me, Justin Robert Young, back for another edition of Weird Things.
If only somebody on the show, it's always me coming up with the content and the ideas on my back. If only somebody had something weird to share.
Okay.
Going once, so, going twice, gone. So, I'm sorry.
So close. You had a weird thing and you didn't say it fast enough.
Didn't work. So we're in LA for, Justin and I, have a cameo in an upcoming movie. And we're going to tell the whole story of the experience on Night Attack. This is foreshadowing for Night Attack later tonight, but I was not in the best state of mind. So it's like, I needed to rebalance everything. So I did, I'm going to call it jogging, but I ended up walking most of it, the 3 miles to Venice Beach, to just walk up and down the beach. And the surf was really, really big. And I walked all the way down to Marina Del Rey, cause I'm at the LA studio of Diamond Club. I like the idea that we just name all of our studios different locations of Diamond Club. But as I'm walking down, the surf is bigger than I usually see it, because it's, you know, we're getting out of winter months and so on.
Yeah.
And there's like a cluster of seaweed, and out of the corner of my eye, see the butt of a human laying in the seaweed, just sort of washing back and forth.
Is it kind of like that claymation, like with like the naked butt claymation that's going around? You seen this?
No, what's the naked butt claymation?
Bryce, do you know this?
Yeah, it's a weird thing that's been going around the past week or so. I'm trying to find it.
Is it graphic? Can we see it right now?
If you can give me some time to find it.
It's very intimate, but as soon as you mentioned it, like it is like just add seaweed to this naked figure that has this protruding butt and just has these very, very, very intimate. I haven't watched all of it, so I don't know if it gets explicit, but like it is not explicit. It is just intimate.
Well, while Bryce is finding it, keep in mind, like, this is kind of a headspace journey where it's just like, I just need to move my body to feel better. And there's, you know, for me, there's nothing like the sound of the crashing surf and all that stuff. Oh my God, this is claymation.
Yeah. So it's like this, but add seaweed.
Yeah, no, okay, we're seeing pretty much
the High Stranger original is the
only
name.
Keep in mind, in my mind, what I see is that with a like pants over it, like it looks like, you know, when you jump in the water in shorts and air fills it and it just creates this kind of balloon butt look, right?
It's like you gotta dunk.
Right, so I, you know, I'm in the middle of kind of sussing stuff out in my head, and I see a clump of seaweed.
You
with
just
what,
did this great expression as he's like touching his head like Rain Man or something. I just imagine Brian out there on the beach going, "What is this?"
and I glance over. I'm like, "Oh, seaweed," and I'm like, "Oh, I guess a man is snorkeling, but why would you snorkel in rough surf, in the seaweed?" And I glance back again, and two words flash into my mind, and it's just like a lightning strike. I was like, "That's a dead body." And
What?
Yeah,
well,
no,
that's
like
not
like
as adorable as that clip. Why did you agree to compare it to that? That's disgusting, Brian. You're disgusting.
It was a dead body.
That's not a dead body. That's a beautiful claymation video. Why would you compare? Did you literally just? Oh no! Well, Bryce has just added a bloody cake, and I don't mean to say it like a British person. Like, the,
well, it's so and so like now comes the triple take because it's like. Because it's definitely rolling with the waves and not moving, and all I can see is the ballooned out airbag filled swim shorts on what clearly is a dead person. But then I look closer, and I'm like, oh, it's distended and discolored. It's like a purplish gray.
So wait, okay. So you've already in your head believe it to be a dead body.
Yes.
And now you are like pointing out how this corpse has, colorfully decomposed in the sun with only a light dusting of seaweed to shield its shame.
Well, so pretend you're me. What are the things? Now keep in mind, it's shrouded in kelp. In rough surf, you can't, it's maybe 30 yards away from you.
Here we go. I'm going to put myself in Brian Brushwood's shoes. Brian Brushwood, I'm walking to the beach. Like, oh my God, is that a dead body? I really should work out more. I wonder what the YouTube comments are saying. I need to tell Bryce that he needs to do more work. Also, I really need to work out more. Anyway, and then you find yourself like at the set at some point. You just drift off.
Okay. So what do you look for? Because at this point, you assume it's a dead, discolored human body.
I mean, the next thing you do is you approach it to confirm your suspicions and then call the proper authorities.
Right. Okay. So you walk forward and you're only able to see what looks like the scarred back of a person and what you originally thought was air inflated pants, just as the rest of the body. You're not able to discern any specific arms or a head or legs.
Okay, so I'm now beginning to entertain the notion that this is not a horrifyingly decapitated and disarmed torso, but rather it might not be a human at all.
So far, batting 1,000. This guy, yeah. He's got it.
So I continue to advance on the prone figure.
But while you advance, you're thinking to yourself, what?
This is...
Nope. You're thinking, I should work out more.
Like, hey, have I texted Bryce yet to tell him that the schedule's totally changed? I'm tired. I need to sleep better.
So what is your theory? It looks vaguely human-sized. It's rolling in the surf. It does not appear to be moving on its own. And it's definitely flesh.
It's flesh.
It's not like...
You're close enough that you could determine it's definitely flesh.
I'm assuming it's animal.
Jellyfish or...
You know what? You think that, and then you look closer and you see that you would assume a jellyfish would be translucent. And if it was a jellyfish, it would be the largest jellyfish you've ever heard of. But also, this is definitely mottled gray flesh. And you can actually see what appear to be scars up and down it.
Brian, I don't. I'm out of guesses. I continue to
advance. Mysterious thing.
Yeah.
Wow. So this is where, if I was a better person, this is where I experienced the moral conflict, because what actual Brian did was just sit and stare at it, hoping the surf would wash it all the way up on the beach.
Oh my God, Brian! But, realize this is a metaphor.
But briefly considering,
you've successfully described a metaphor for your conflict avoidance.
But briefly considering being a journalist and taking pictures, but you weren't thinking of the Weird Things podcast. You were thinking about how you needed to work out more, and so you. So at this point, I'm like, what is that? Because it looks like the back of a manatee, but it's not big enough to be a manatee. It's got the scars like you see on the back of some manatees.
It'd be a baby manatee.
Yeah. Well, and so at some point, the waves shift and you see what definitely looks like a dolphin-like tail on the back.
So I'm going to go ahead and assume it's a dolphin?
That's, well, okay. So what is the one bit of confirming evidence you would need to get to know whether or not it was a dolphin?
DNA test? Because it could be a porpoise. I confuse them all the time.
That's, boom, that's exactly, that's, oh, you win at thinking the Brian Thoughts game. Because I'm like, okay, it's a dead animal. It's the size of a dolphin. It looks like it has a dolphin-like tail, but I don't know the difference between a porpoise and a dolphin. And it was big. We're like 200 pounds. And I look for it. And keep in mind, like the local lifeguard, local patrols are coming and going. And I think to myself, like, oh, should I call the authorities? 911, there's a dead creature. And it occurs to me like somebody's going to see it in the next 5 minutes. So I basically watch this distended, blubbered, scarred, mottled gray corpse of a thing flop back and forth in 6 foot swells because the surf was very high. And what I'm looking for is that bottle nose. And I just am wishing that it will, you know, roll over the right way on the right wave to where I'll see the face. But unfortunately, and this is my own supposition, I assume that both the body of dolphins and the body of porpoises are designed to go forward in water. So as the water pushes forward, the body keeps turning and showing its butt to me. And ultimately, I realize that to solve this mystery.
You're also making a lot of assumptions on the integrity of this corpse because God knows, like it did. I don't know if it just got to like, ah, finally, Venice Beach. Now I can die and relinquish, shuffle off this mortal coil.
Oh my gosh. You know what? I think I just saw the actual answer in the chat. I have not thought about it. Somebody suggested seal or sea lion because that was the part I couldn't
reconcile.
Wait,
you don't know?
Well, I couldn't. Okay, it looked like the body of a dead dolphin, but what little I was able to see. Keep in mind the kelp and the surf and all that stuff was I never saw the bottle nose. It looked like it had kind of a snub nose at the front.
Whoa! Hold on. So you didn't take pictures and you don't know what it is?
No, that would be ghoulish. And besides, we wouldn't have a mystery to solve. This.
And besides, I really need to start working out more.
So, can we find? Here's all I want to know, Bryce. Can you show me a picture of the difference between
his beach and go find this corpse of sea?
No. can you look at? Because I think. Because that was the part that was weird to me is I never saw a bottle nose. If I could see a picture of a porpoise and a picture of a dolphin and some kind of understanding of what the difference is between the two, then if they're close enough, because I know for sure I never saw a that it was a sea lion. That was the face I saw. That was a dead sea lion. Mystery solved. I definitely saw a dead sea. Look at the colors. Same mottled gray. Had the chopped up back roll. It was a sea lion. I saw a
dog-like
sea lion.
Tongue, big eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that was the weird part was I thought it looks like a dolphin with the face of a manatee. That was the mystery. That was what I couldn't reconcile.
Brian,
and now that I see a sea lion.
I want Brian to draw a medieval bestiology or whatever for bestiary for it. Yes. I want the Brian explains the animal kingdom to the world based on like 2 seconds of glimpsing at something like, okay, I got this.
Man, I wish I could say
it's also heavily reliant on like things that you've seen in the last 2 months.
Like, like a python and a cheetah, and a cheetah.
It kind of looks like
a giraffe. Yes. A giraffe.
like the body of a manatee and the face of Legion on FX, but only the pilot because I've seen it three times.
Hold on. I think you guys might be onto something, because the experience that we just experienced was why we think of mermaids and so on, because there was no photography. There was no way to preserve the moment. All you had was eyewitness accounts and people's best guesses of looking at things they know. That's amazing.
Oh, my God. Wait a minute. Is this going to end with you like? Anyway, so yeah, it was a mermaid. It was the most beautiful mermaid I ever saw.
Give the story a few more rounds of telling, and we'll simplify it, and we'll land on that. It'll be fine.
Well, I'll tell you what.
It had the body of a fish, but the face was beautiful. Look at those eyes. You show me the picture again. Like, I could describe it to you. Like, had these
We're now back to the Hey Stranger video. That's what Brian saw looking at him from the lapping surf of Venice Beach, ladies and gentlemen.
Right, compare the Hey Stranger video to that sea lion, and it's shockingly close, I say.
Well, I'll tell you what else is shockingly close. Your availability to support this show, patreon.com/weirdthings is where you... Oh, Jesus. Now... we're just at we're breaking new grounds on Rule 34, aren't we? Well, you can support us, patreon.com/weirdthings. Get on over there and kick us some cash. It keeps us loud, live, and independent. Every week, we get you a new episode of this show, even if sometimes it's got to be delayed a day like it is this week. I think it's also going to have to be next week, too. But go ahead and kick some in if you are a fan of the show and you believe it is worth something. To you, we thank everybody who has already donated to make this a reality. So thanks to everybody.
It is much, much appreciated. So, gentlemen, it is going to be a week of Elon Musk news.
Oh, yeah. That's right. He's got that new company he's backing, right?
Well, so we've got Thursday is the scheduled launch day to try to reuse one of the Falcon 9 rocket cores. So that's scheduled for
48 hours from now, Thursday?
That Thursday, Brian.
Wait a minute. Oh, that's so huge.
Where is it launching from?
It's going to be in Orlando. You'll be. Oh, wait, Cape Canaveral.
Oh.
Justin, you're going to be in Orlando.
And I have a rental car.
Do you want to experience and document history? Do you want to be the one?
We're going to go ahead and take a look at how early that's happening.
So that's happening Thursday. So we'll talk about that. We'll figure out if we're going to have our on the scene reporter there, and no photos, no video. We just want you to describe this thing that was like this log on fire
also,
going up in the sky.
Just tell us if it had the face of a sea lion or not. Just describe it to your best of your ability.
And the other thing is what Brian, you just mentioned, is Elon Musk has announced that he's helped start another company called Neuralink. And if you're a fan of Eamon Bank stories and Peter F. Hamilton and a lot of this future forward sort of thinking, one of the things that seems to be a very common idea in any kind of way out there future civilization is how we link our brains to computers. And the Neuralace is one such idea, basically this sort of integration, this interface between the brain and a computer system that allows you to still retain your you-ness, but have access to kind of like just getting rid of all those touch screens and all that icky stuff that we have to use to get access to the internet and computational power. Neuralink is going to be used for helping people who have, let's say, brain disease, degenerative disorders, whatnot, and to help them get better, you know, control over themselves. But eventually the long-term strategy seems to be moving towards the brain technology interface.
So this is what details about the technology itself are known at this point? Is this like a magic hat that you put on that does like transcranial stimulation or sensing or whatever?
Make you look like a sea lion?
I don't know what the early stage form, but the eventual form of the Neuralace would ideally be something that actually connects to the brain, because you're just never going to get the fidelity of the resolution if you're trying to do it externally that you would from just linking right up to the brain.
Got it. So are any details known about like the timeline of – I mean, obviously – you know, every journey begins with a 45th step or whatever. But any talk of what – have they done any showy releases? Have they shown Lawnmower Man and said, look at him. He walks now or anything like that?
I don't think they've got that yet, but I think that they're starting to work towards that. I think that the idea is, hey, we're going to, this is a goal. We're going to try to solve this for, do this. Long Neuralink piece coming out on Wait But Why in about a week is what Elon Musk said yesterday. Difficult to dedicate time, but existential risk is too high not to. And so his the purpose for this is he sees the threat of AI. Elon Musk is very, very concerned about the idea that we create AIs or other individuals create AI that kind of works against our own agendas and that we have this fast accelerating computer power that just leaves humans as very, very insignificant little players, and we're going to be, you know, basically bred out of existence or outcompeted. And he looks at Neuralinks, the ability for us to interface directly with computer systems, as a way to sort of even that out, to give us this this capability and to have this sort of maintain this edge.
So as the AIs become more and more sophisticated, we can keep track on some level because we will be able to upgrade, upgrade our hardware basically with new software.
Yeah.
So, and this is all I'm assuming we'll have to speculate wildly, but it might a journey, and I'm making all this up, and feel free to interrupt me and tell me where I'm getting stuff wrong. But the proto version, the stuff that might be happening behind the scenes right now, is somebody who is locked in or quadriplegic, wearing a exoskeleton or something. The relationship is brain 100% in charge, AI equals basically proto Siri, just watching the brain and learning patterns because neural networks are able to look at many examples of things and extrapolate, okay, when this happens, we tend to see this. And so it watches the brain and it says, you look like you're thinking about raising your arm. I'm going to raise your arm. Think yes if you want your arm raised. And you think yes, and then your arm gets raised and stuff. And then eventually that advances to a superior network, AI that is now watching your brain so precisely and has so much data to work with that pretty much real time, it's like, you want your arm raised, you want to flex your fingers, you want to give the middle finger to that cop because you're driving, because it's now linking everything to the other thing. And around this time, once it's safe, military's looking at it to enhance stuff. They've built exoskeletons because they're looking and saying, hey, this works with this. Why not do it with giant robots? You give soldiers the surgery. You fit them in a mech, and they just think about moving their body. And the AI is so good that it just articulates all the limbs of the mech as if it's the person. And then they're like, hey, AI, also start giving feedback. So when it gets punched, it feels as if you're being hit. And then at that point, that's a functional cyborg. But then once that gets established, Elon Musk's great-great-great-great-grandson looks and says, well, why not just make it smaller and more beautiful? And also, why are we bothering to have our actual limbs? We can slowly remove them and just keep the brainstem and the memories and the back stuff. And the AI working in tandem with the human being can experience everything in perfect flesh, right? And then great-great-grandson after that is – At this point, it's like, why do we have bodies? Why not just have AI human fusions? Because now the AI is so good that it's able to completely predict every single thing that the human brain and spinal cord is thinking in advance, because it has enough data sets and it learns from birth. So at some point, once you hit the age of 80, just like at this point, the predictive technology is so good, it's indistinguishable from the original human. So at some point, instead of dying, why don't we just slowly flush out all of the biological parts? And now we have an actual copy, a perfect AI copy of a super intelligent person connected to all other humanity, with their own agency, their own will, with memories of humanity going back all the way to birth, and they can be their own agents. But then, let's say then they suffer body loss, they explode, but luckily they have backups. So now all of a sudden it's just like, well, let's just reboot another one. Now you start going back into history. Like, let's clone Oh man, this is this roughly where we're headed, Andrew? I don't have this out for the first time.
So I don't know. I could tell you in a shorter term, yes, and that certainly one application certainly is in cybernetics. Okay. And the whole idea of where that goes. Another application, think about this. Think about the idea. If I have this nice little brain interface sitting on top of my head and I'm here, I'm like, man, I really want to watch Blade Runner. And I just have it play right in front of my visual system. I have it just tell my brain to start playing it, create a little movie screen in front of me, and I'm sitting there, I'm watching it. Or I could be sitting in my bed, chilling out, like, you know what? Make me feel like I'm in the middle of an IMAX. Like, put the virtual reality, put all that inside of your head, take control of your sensory system. Hey, call Justin. Justin's inside my head. You know, hey, let's watch this. So think about not just what it means physically and how we interact with the world around us, but how we take information. Like right now we're sitting in front of computers. We've got all these screens, all these things handling, you know, doing things. A lot of this could be done by AI at some point. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff, the visual stuff is we could be having this conversation in our heads. Some say that we do. And that would be another approach towards it, how you integrate with all of this. And I just think in the shorter term, like, you know, we've talked about being able to use computers to make it easier for like for helping the blind see, you know, and doing that. And then also just the idea of, man, wouldn't it have been awesome if you could have taken all of your memories for what happened when, I don't know, you're at Venice Beach the other day. And just let us see that.
And just be like, well, oh, I was recording the whole time. Let me go back in my personal DVR and I'll just copy the file over to you. You can just replay it and see everything I saw.
Yeah, we'll just have to mute the sound of like, oh man, I gotta work out more. Is that a seal? Somebody called Bryce.
So here's the other side of it is if we know that so this is trying to essentially read a mind and understand motivation and I guess project visual stimulation or auditory stimulation or whatever. But I assume you gain the ability to purge unpleasant memories, which I think will be a fairly early application in terms of curing people of PTSD. You know, it's like, hey man, it's not great that you got the baggage of, you know, watching, rape, murder, explosions, feet get blown off or whatever. And it's like, if you would like a more pleasant life, we can purge that for you. And then it becomes
maybe.
Like,
there's some people who think that you should, that's not the way to deal with those sort of traumas too.
Sure. Yeah. I'm saying could, not should.
Yeah. It gets us to larger questions of what, you know, what makes us us, you know, that now if we can network and augment what goes on within our heads and not necessarily in what, like, we immediately gravitate toward things like memories, right? Because that is something that we all have a shared experience about, and yet is this larger question of exactly what they are and what they mean and how reliable they are, right?
But I
suspect that what we're going to find is that so much more of what is useful are things that we just kind of take for granted in terms of our motor functions and you know, how we learn things, how we execute things, how...
I love the idea of just, you know, when it comes to working out, like, hey, make doing push-ups like the most awesome thing in the world for me right now.
Yeah,
So number one, in terms of like dopamine, like just having more, having that triggered response, right? But also, what if it's just like, you can just know that you can do a perfect push-up, you know, like when you work out correctly, even if it was as small as that, you know, I think that it creates tremendous benefit.
So real quick, part of the reason I brought up the PTSD memories thing is because there was a Wired article talking about pharmacologically, this is an actual treatment that is essentially in beta, where they take people who have terrible PTSD memories, and much like, you know, you hear about the Ambien walrus, you hear stories of people who take an Ambien and they mean to go to bed, but they get distracted, and then 6 hours later they're naked outside or whatever. You know, there are pharmaceuticals that inhibit the ability to keep memories on there, and there's some drugs that they are experimenting with, basically. They take somebody for a therapy session, and of course they're having therapy, but they're like, take this pill, and now I want to, as vividly as possible, walk you through the traumatic memory that you're having difficulty with. Because as we've talked about on the show, when you remember something, you are not remembering the actual original event. You are remembering your last reimagining of the event. That's the reason stories get so out of line and stuff. And so many people disagree on exactly what happened after the fact. It's the reason that eyewitness testimony is totally unreliable. And so by having one of these memory inhibitors and walking through the experience again, like it's not like it alters your personality, but it's just harder to access. It's fuzzier. It turns down the volume, because the problem with PTSD is that memories hit you, and they hit you so hard that they cripple you and they hurt you in the moment. And but the ability to vaguely recall a bad dream, because that's what happens, is there have been terrible things. If you've ever had a nightmare, in those brief moments after you wake up, it's very powerful and very unpleasant to walk through it. But the brain knows how to scrub bad memories or wrong memories, incorrect memories, basically, right? They're like, no, that was a dream. You go ahead and remember that you had a dream with a monster, but don't feel the terror of it as if he's there pressing on your chest again. And so basically it would take traumatic events and put it in that, so people aren't crippled when they get, you know, so-called triggered, right? When they find themselves in a similar situation, they're like, oh, this is too close to that really unpleasant time that I peed myself in front of a classroom. I can't give this speech. It's like now you would just kind of vaguely.
Last time Penny lets me show up for parent. Yeah.
but at any rate, so there's that.
Yeah, I think it's a very exciting area of research. And there's a couple, it's funny, there's been a couple articles that came up today, and like typical, like Gizmodo's like, oh, Elon Musk is wrong that this will help us fight off AI. I'm like,
how do you know, dog? Like, you know.
I'm like, I don't. Maybe I don't. I did. You know, Hawkins tech blogger definitively says billionaire industrialist investing heavily in AI is totally wrong and doesn't get it. It's like, well,
you know. And that's just the game, right? When they put Elon Musk in a contrary way in a headline, they get clicks. There's just an audience that wants that kind of commentary. Which, I mean, not inherently the worst. It's just kind of, in my opinion, a little useless.
Boy, yeah. There is, though, there was a fantastic Cracked article talking about how prominent, essentially, there's so many loaded terms here. I don't know how to navigate this. But basically, how folks like Milo Yiannopoulos essentially hack your attention by intentionally using rage-inducing quotes, right? And the position has been made by some that that's essentially a part of the Trump strategy. Was basically, well, all I know is that when you're mad at me, you talk about me, and you know, he wrote it all the way to the presidency. But part of it, and I may misremember some of this, but in the discussion on the Crack podcast, they were talking about how essentially, yes, it is unpleasant to become enraged, but it's better than being bored. And so as a result, that's why those things get clicks. And to some extent, we become addicted to rage watching things, including the news and all that stuff. And it's interesting because it's such a potent dopamine hit that, like, I'm not very interested in the Trump presidency, just inherently. But my wife is like, she's the, like, we'll be in the bathtub hanging out, having our wine time. And, you know, it's like, hey, this is us connecting. And out of nowhere, she'll bring up a Trump thing that she's really fired up about. And I'm just like, he's not invited here. He's never invited into this bathtub. And she can't stop doing it because there's something like she is dealing with a rage addiction right now. And I think that podcast really put a lot of stuff in perspective in that way.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around.
You should, well,
and in
you
fact,
should
it's
show her a dead seal.
So, in other news, Antarctica's weird. Antarctica's very weird. Apparently, some satellite sort of sensing technology from space have discovered something, a massive anomaly underneath the ice in Antarctica.
Is it dead seals?
Bunch of them. the huge and mysterious anomaly is thought to be lurking beneath the frozen wastes of an area called Wilkes Land. The area is 151 miles across and has a minimum depth of about 2,700 feet.
Wow.
And the actual theory is that it may be a massive asteroid bigger than the Chicxulub space rock that wiped out the dinosaurs. There may be an even bigger asteroid, like a big, huge crater. And that's one of the things, you ever look on Google Earth and you look at for round indentations and stuff, there's a lot of crater impacts on Earth.
So would it be, we know that right now, is it Space Ventures is the company that is planning to go out and mine asteroids?
Planetary Ventures.
Planetary Ventures. It seems like... if I'm involved with that, and the theory is there's lots of valuable iridium or whatever up there in them rocks, it seems like maybe a mining expedition would make sense. If not for them, then for somebody else who wants to get what they get, because I assume something that big would largely be intact. It would still have its minerals, right?
I don't know enough about impact craters to understand if they're like, if it's just a thing that this thing, because it's 151 miles across. So this was not an asteroid 151 miles across that smashed into there. Okay.
Right. But crater.
Yeah. The crater's that big. So that means it made an explosion and everything was in that tiny little rock, not tiny rock, but I mean, this is a huge rock, is now smashed across 151 miles. So I don't know. Let's look up the.
What was the KT crater, the Yucatan Peninsula? Like that was, I want to say I heard it was like the size of Manhattan, and it
6 miles in diameter.
Yeah. Okay. So size of Manhattan. Then in that case, like if that one fully disintegrated and killed all the dinosaurs, then whatever one this one is certainly disintegrated as well.
Yeah, so that's the thing, is that you would certainly want to look in the composition to see what's there. And that's why, that's kind of how we think we know what some of these asteroids are made of, is because we go look at impact craters and we're like, well, we're picking up elevated amounts of this and that, but trying to find, and there can be large chunks and things like that there. And we do find those from time to time, but that is the challenge of that,
trying to figure that out. Or less likely to find stuff that is relevant in determining what it was because it is in an inhospitable and frozen environment like Antarctica.
Well, I mean, it's under at least half a mile of ice, right?
Yeah.
And you're going to find a crater, and you're going to find the crater. So we've got nothing like apparently this scale on Earth that we've aware of. We got other craters that are huge though. And that's when you start look at like craters, like Earth craters, and you start to see there's a lot of stuff, a lot of things that there's just a lot of just beautiful images of stuff that you look at and like, oh, wow, no, that's clearly, you know, what that is. And we get hit a lot.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It's not
the
a rare
Earth
thing.
Looks at the moon, or the moon says to the Earth, we're not so different, you and I.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I guess I've never really taken the time to look at like just impact craters. These things are massive.
Yeah. And they're things that you don't really think about, you know, when you're on level land, just looking across, unless it's like one of the big ones, like in the middle of the desert, you're like, oh yeah, this is clearly this. But when it's filled in with land or filled in with water or vegetation, and these are the ones that are just hit on land. But you look at some of these other ones and you're like, oh yeah, this is clearly something hit there. You realize we're getting, you know, we get hit a lot.
Man, how do you think in our lifetime, how many people in our lifetime have been killed by meteors? I want to say it's vanishingly small right now, right?
Yeah, it's extremely small. Almost. Yeah.
But I thought I heard at least one. Like I know there was definitely a story I heard about somebody crashed right through their roof and it just sort of flopped down and knocked him in the arm. So he got hit. Oh, there it is. Looks so like 2016, maybe the first death by meteorite ever in recorded history.
Although NASA officials are poo-pooing it, apparently.
More consistent with a land-based explosion than a space rock, says New York Times.
So,
you know, with one of these big ones, like the one in Antarctica, how many dead sea lions do you feel like you could fit in there? Like,
I mean, what if that's what that was one of the, you know, the long old, the immortal dead sea lion
the
made the journey.
Dead sea lion gambit, huh?
Yep. So in our lifetime, if you were going to bet Not so much that we'll see one of these destroy, you know, a substantial chunk of humanity, or like,
I mean, if I were to lay the odds on that, I mean,
well, I guess what I'm asking is, like, I know we track the really big ones, the right. planet killers, right? But I would imagine something that could make, you know, I don't know, like the, I don't know, a big enough crater might, humanity is covering so much of the globe right now that if one of these, like the craters we're looking at right now, were to happen, I can imagine, you know, 20, 30 people getting killed. I guess I just, well, just don't.
Is it going to hit a Piggly Wiggly? That's what I'm asking.
Yes.
I mean, the closest example we've had is the Chelyabinsk meteor, which, you know, was great. We got to cover that when that happened, because that was first thing happens. It sounded almost like it was just some sort of PR stunt, whatever. And then we watched all the dash cam footage. We're like, wow, this is real. And you're seeing the broken windows. So well, that was very interesting.
But the Tunguska blast happened in the beginning of the 20th century, which we assume is a meteor or something exploding. And that just luckily happened to be in a totally uninhabited part of the planet, right?
Yeah. So that was happened away from everything else. And certainly that would have, you know, most of the planet is still like that though. That's the thing. Most of the planet is, it's either water or, you know, that's the thing, is we live in cities. We tend to think of the planet being filled with cities, but most of it is not.
If we just speculate, and of course we're making all this up, that yeah. you got the Tunguska blast and then the last one in Russia. Let's say you have one of those every 100 years.
Wait, one of which?
What's that?
Like the Tunguska?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so have a Tunguska blast every 100 years. I guess the odds are pretty good that it lands either on water or in an unpopulated area, especially as population density you know, goes yeah. to a few areas.
Like the only people who think that we take up more and more of the world, which although probably objectively true, but it's still a fraction of the planet. Right, like a very, very small, you know, area comparatively. If things are landing, I mean, God knows how many things have landed just randomly in the ocean, right? Like,
yeah.
So, and just because, like, the Tunguska is the largest in recorded history. We have no other account of anything on that level. So, if it had been, and we would see the effects of it to some degree in other places. So, I don't think that we could say that that's a 100-year event. You know, okay. I don't know what that, and that's not to say that, you know, 2000 years ago over Australia, something big happened and hit and smashed into the ocean, or just we don't know, but that was a huge event. And certainly, but that is within, there are people alive, well, almost alive today who are, you know, around for that. So it's a, you know, significant sort of event. So, you know, I the same thing I talk about, you know, you're more likely to have a smaller problem than a bigger problem. You're more likely to have a smaller health problem than a major health problem. You're more likely to have a smaller, more of the Russian, you know, overhead city ones, things like that happening than the big one. And hopefully that's what you hope are the wake up calls.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
before we start taking it seriously.
Yeah.
Take precautions. Keep an eye out a little bit more. Chuck some dead sea lions at them. See
what's up. Well, let's jump right into picks. We will do Journey Quest next week and be an extra special episode.
Yeah, dude, my pick is going to be that Cracked article. That was really insightful, or the podcast, the one that talks about our obsession with rage watching things.
It's called How Ann Coulter and Milo Yiannopoulos Are Playing You.
Yeah.
If you just look up their podcast.
My pick is a silly one. I watched half of Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, starring Zac Efron, Anna Kendrick, Aubrey Plaza, and the guy from Workaholics, and it's pretty funny on a United flight. Better than X-Men Apocalypse, I will say.
I am jumping all on board the Expanse train. I finally watched the first season, and I watched the first episode like back when it first came on, and I'm like, well, it's like, all right, a spoiler. The first episode, like, man, all the really pretty people survived, you know, it's like, but once I got past that, got into it, because like I tried reading the audiobook or listening to the audiobook, and it just part of it just it dragged for me. But I kind of now want to go back into it. I just said, let me just watch the show because everybody raves about it. I watched a really great presentation about the science of it, and I think they're very sincere in trying to do as good of a job as they can with the restraints they have. And, you know, and they, you watch from a technical point of view, like, you know, like they're on the talk about they're on an asteroid or they're on a asteroid, they're on Ceres, and they show like this Coriolis force as they pour a liquid and all that. Of course, it's like I'm watching this like Ceres has 3% Earth gravity. So, you know, it's you're not going to be walking around and fighting like that, but that's OK. I get it. You know this. You're doing the best you can to tell the story. And they do a really good job when ships are in motion, like if the ships are accelerating. You know, they have like they're walking around like, but of course you can't accelerate for that long or else you're going to like, you know, exceed the speed of light. But that's OK. They understand that. They're trying to make it a smart show and they do a really good job of smart show. And more importantly, the characters are really good. The story is really good. I was really, really into the story. I really like the universe they've set up. I'm like, I could watch this mystery get resolved. I could watch other stories go in there because there's a lot of just cool challenges. So I am all aboard The Expanse. It's right now, I think, on Amazon Prime. Highly recommend you check that out if you're looking for something.
I'll say it's worth just buying. Like whether you have cable, don't have cable. Even if you have cable, don't bother to sit through commercials. Just buy it. It's fantastic.
Oh, there you go. The nice. Expanse. Gentlemen, it's been a dead seal.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.